You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories. And welcome to episode 308 of the podcast. And in this episode, I chat with Angel Brown, who has kindly agreed to share her story with us. And in particular, we talk about harm, intrusive thoughts, panic attacks, health anxiety, her compulsions, the fear of going crazy, doing exposure and response prevention therapy and what that was like for her, helping her family understand how to support her better, and much, much more. I really enjoyed hearing Angel's story, and I hope you do too. And thanks as always to NoCD for supporting the work that I do. NoCD offers affordable, effective, convenient therapy available in the US and outside the US. If you wanted to find out more about their therapy services and whether they take your insurance currently, head over to go.treatmyocd.com/COCD stories, or the link will be in the episode description. And thank you as always to you guys for listening. I deeply appreciate it. And without further ado, here is Angel. Welcome to the show, Angel.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. And as you know, I'd love to hear your OCD story in as little or as much detail as you want to share.
Yeah, so I suppose I'll start with the beginning of my OCD diagnosis, so to speak. I believe I've had OCD most of my life, though. But it started last year. When COVID came about and we were in a lockdown in the UK, and I was put on full-time furlough from work, and my fiance continued working and he was based in the office as well.
Okay.
So I was at home a lot on my own, and I didn't really have a lot of a routine, and I was kind of getting quite depressed at that point, and a lot of kind of scaremongering from the media as well. So I started kind of overthinking a lot, and I'd say I was probably having quite negative thoughts at that point, but I didn't really label them as intrusive. So it's kind of more of a feeling for me. So I was getting quite anxious. And then as COVID progressed, it kind of just got worse. In the beginning, I went to a hypnotherapist because that had previously, when I was younger, helped with my anxiety. So that was my first kind of thought, is to go to a hypnotherapist. So I found an amazing lady local to me, and she really, really helped, and the hypnotherapy helped me, and I kind of got over that initial anxiety, and for 7 months I was fine. So I kind of see it now as my OCD was laying dormant. Obviously at that point I still didn't even know that I had OCD, and then when we went in the December, I got engaged, which was a really happy moment for me and really exciting. And that was on the 23rd of December. And then obviously in the UK, we had the announcement of the lockdown on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
So we were only allowed to see one family on Christmas Day. And then that was it. So the excitement came crashing down quite quickly. Yeah. And I started to spiral into a worse state than before. So I was watching a lot of Netflix, and my fiance wanted to watch Cecil Hotel. And I watched that, and I remember feeling very anxious watching it. And after we'd finished watching it, I started to get kind of what I would say my first known intrusive thoughts. So I started to kind of get into a panic of, am I going to go crazy? And that's where it started for me. So for anyone that hasn't watched Cecil, it's based on mental health. So the girl in it, she has mental health issues. And it was quite frightening. So that was my first experience of intrusive thoughts.
Yeah.
But again, I didn't know what they were at the time. I just knew they were unwanted. So I got myself in a bit of a panic. I managed to kind of get myself out of it a bit. And then in the UK, we had a murder case. Sarah Everard.
Everard, yeah.
Yeah, Everard, sorry. Yeah, Sarah Everard. So that really hit me because she was similar age to me. There was just kind of a lot of similarities there. And I go to London a lot for work. And yeah, so that was the turning point where the OCD spiraled out of control. And I was getting intrusive thoughts. Initially, it was around, I was concerned about that someone might harm me. And then it turned to, what if I harm someone else? So as we all know now, it's kind of where the harm OCD started for me. And yeah, that was a really frightening time of my life. And I was having panic attacks regularly. It then came to sort of the anxiety causing daily issues. I was unable to get out of bed. I was unable to go to work. I also was unable to eat as well. So I lost about a stone, I think, during that time. And I'm not a big girl anyway. So for me, that was probably quite dangerous. So it absolutely spiraled out of control at that point. And then I was very lucky that I knew that something needed to be done very, very early on. So within a few months, I'd contacted my local service called Time to Talk on the NHS. And I was incredibly lucky that I was able to get in very quickly because after that point, they had about a 7-month waiting list. So I was able to get into Time to Talk, and I started kind of talking to them in the assessment process.
Yeah.
And I was still kind of starting to see my hypnotherapist again. But the hypnotherapist sort of said to me that, look, you can really either do one or the other, because I don't want to conflict with any information that you're getting from the NHS.
Yeah.
So at this point, they thought that I had health OCD.
Okay. Why did they think that?
So I suppose there was a lot of things going on at once. So I had the, you know, the fear of going crazy, the harm OCD stuff. I also had a tendency to over worry about my health and others' health as well. So there was multiple things going on at once. And I suppose in the beginning, they kind of zoomed in on the health side of it because there was someone around me that had cancer at the time. And I was overly concerned about that. But I wasn't checking myself as such. I was just more concerned and quite, you know, it was causing me a lot of anxiety over that. So they went down that road in the beginning. But the hypnotherapist said to me, in my experience with OCD, I don't believe you have health OCD. So I sort of said that to Time to Talk, and they then kind of thought, okay, let's have a look at some other sides of generally OCD. So they did an assessment with me on that. And that was kind of a bit of an epiphany for me because I still at this point didn't understand what OCD was. So I was one of those people that naively thought that OCD was related to cleaning. Mm. And it annoys me now when people say that to me, but I was kind of looking at it from the perspective of what I'd seen in the media.
Yeah.
Of the washing hands and things like that. So I had no idea at this point that OCD could even be related to various different topics, that it could be related to anything really. Mm. So they did the general OCD assessment on me, and it said things like, you know, have you been worried about hurting others or yourself and things like that, and those kind of harm questions.
Yeah.
And I ranked very highly in those questions. So that was when they kind of said, look, we think you do have OCD. And that's when I started my journey to kind of learning about the world of OCD. Mm. And what it's really about.
Yeah.
Was that shocking to realize that what I thought was OCD, in fact, isn't? It's this, it's what I'm experiencing.
Absolutely. Mm. It was kind of a mixed emotion. It was confusion because I didn't understand it at the time. And that is part of the problem. Mm. When I was getting the intrusive thoughts, because everyone gets obviously intrusive thoughts, but they'd never really stood out to me throughout my life until this point. And I think it's because at this point they were so reoccurrent. So I almost felt as if my mind was racing all the time.
Yeah.
And there was no room for any other thoughts other than those. So I suppose I kind of, my misunderstanding of OCD was my downfall as well.
Okay.
As is with most people, that your immediate reaction is to push those thoughts out of your mind.
Hmm.
And by me doing that, I was then encouraging them to come back and creating more fear. And I also have, you know, a strong memory of me counteracting those negative thoughts with positive words as well. So anytime I had like a harm OCD thought, or I would immediately say, oh, like happiness, and you know, like I'd try and give positive words. And I had no idea at that point that again, this was reassuring it and encouraging it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I suppose in the last year, it's been a huge journey for me with OCD. And my therapist helped me massively. It began with CBT. So it was kind of retraining my thought process. And researching, because one of my biggest compulsions is Google.
Okay. Yeah.
And this is something that it took me a long time to kind of get my head around, because we all love Google and it just feels so natural for us to do that. So I didn't recognize that that was one of my biggest problems as well. I was constantly Googling things like, oh God, a lot of things. It could be, you know, if I was concerned about someone I know that had cancer, it could be, you know, signs of cancer, or you know, learning about the diagnosis process and how long they might live and things like that. It, you know, was with my harm OCD, sort of things like sort of looking up things about murderers and kind of comparing that to myself, which sounds really crazy, but obviously to the OCD community, this is our life, this is normal. So I think it's crazy when I think about it now, knowing what I know, that at the time it's a very real thing. And it's I was looking at things like that. Also things like, you know, other mental health issues. So I seem to be quite fixated on schizophrenia as well. And
yeah.
I would think, oh, well, what if I get that? Or what if I go so crazy that I end up in a mental institute? All the kind of normal things that we get. I was Googling that, but I didn't realize that was a compulsion.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. So, thank you. Yeah. So, you said it started with CBT.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you want to talk a bit more about that? And then I'm guessing it transitioned to something else?
Yes. Yeah. So it started with CBT, and I did a lot of kind of research out of the sessions about OCD, but in a positive way. So kind of learning more about it. I also came across your podcast, which really helped me. So I would listen to that every week as well, just to kind of learn more about it. And then my therapist said, I think that ERP would benefit you. And at that point, I had no idea what ERP was. And when she explained it to me, I immediately was very frightened by it. And when I spoke to my family and friends about it, their immediate reaction was, you don't want to do that because you're putting yourself in front of your biggest fear. Why would you want to do that? So in the beginning, I was kind of like, yeah, you're right. Like, why would I want to do that? That doesn't make any sense. Again, because I didn't understand how OCD worked.
Well, it's a valid question, isn't it?
I think like your friends and family, and you know, they're trying to get their head around the fact that you have an OCD diagnosis and trying to understand it themselves. But also, I felt the immediate reaction was reassurance, especially from my parents. You know, the immediate thing they want to do is reassure you and make things better. So that was kind of quite a difficult time because I was very conflicted with what my therapist was telling me and what my friends and family were sort of encouraging of, like, no, you shouldn't do this, it's going to make it worse.
Yeah.
And I think it's because they saw my reaction to these things. You know, it got to the point where I was watching the news and I'd have to turn over because I couldn't hear anything about a murder or anything violent, or anything mental health related either. But my therapist was very good at sort of explaining to me that this is what I need to get better. And she sort of explained to me that ERP is the gold standard for OCD. And that's something that I never knew either. I also was at that point considering medication. And the doctor had prescribed me sertraline, but I was too frightened to take that.
And is that a worry of, I'm just predicting, what if I lose control if I take this medication?
Yeah, so there's an element of that, but also because of my kind of Googling compulsions, I obviously Googled sertraline for hours on end and read all the side effects. And I got quite fixated on the side effect of this could cause suicidal thoughts. But so much medication has side effects.
Yeah.
We take paracetamol, we take ibuprofen. There's so many things that we take and all of them have potentially severe side effects if you're the one in a million person.
Yeah.
But I couldn't see that at the time. So I was like, I'm not taking sertraline. There's no way. In the very beginning, they prescribed me Valium. Again, I was like, there's no way I'm taking that. So I did not take medication. I went down the ERP route, but later down the line, I remained open-minded about taking sertraline. So the ERP started and it caused a lot of anxiety. We were creating hierarchy. And I think the start of the hierarchy list was not as frightening to me because it was kind of very small things like, you know, being able to watch the news without turning over.
Yeah, yeah.
So kind of small scale stuff. And then it kind of led up to the big stuff of, you know, me actually seeking out an article about murder.
Okay.
And I definitely found that very anxiety provoking. And I found it incredibly difficult. And every part of me was saying, get away from it. But I was so committed to the ERP. And I had every faith at that point that it would work for me. But I just needed to put the time into it. And once I'm kind of the person that once I start something, I'm fully all in on it. So I was not going to give up. So I just carried on. And the sort of top of my hierarchy was watching Cecil Hotel. And also, you know, being able to speak about murders and particularly the case with Sarah as well, because that was a real anxiety provoking conversation for me. And obviously in the UK, it was a huge conversation.
It was massive.
On social media, on the TV, and within, you know, even colleagues and things like that. So.
On that, what was I going to say? So obviously now you're saying her name and you're talking about murder and, I'm guessing though at the time it wasn't so easy to even say these words.
Absolutely not. If anybody said her name or I saw anything about it, I would immediately want to avoid that conversation. Or if I was scrolling on Facebook, I would immediately scroll through and just get away from it. So it was not easy in the beginning, but it, as you know, with ERP, it starts with the small steps. So, you know, I definitely would not have been able to do those up there things in the beginning, but with the small steps, I was able to get more comfortable. The news was like the first thing. And that again, you know, I'd remember sitting there and my fiance would sort of look at me and I'd be like, because I suppose with the news, you don't know what's going to come on.
No.
So there's an element of the unknown with it, which obviously OCD doesn't like. So I'd sit there and think, what's going to come on? Please be something good. Please be something nice. Don't be any. And then a murder would come on.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, oh no. And I would sort of look at the remote and think, I really want to turn this over. And my fiance would look at me and be like, don't do it. Don't turn over. You've got to just sit with it. So that's kind of how I got through my ERP. Eventually, I sort of explained to my family and friends the situation, and I kind of said to them, look, you can't give me reassurance. And they were kind of like, well, what do we say then? I'd be like, well, maybe it would help if you say, is this an OCD thought? I kind of said it like that to them because I thought actually, you know, in that scenario, it's very difficult for somebody that doesn't know about OCD to know how to deal with it. And also, you know, it's not easy for them to be able to say to you, yeah, there's a possibility you could murder someone. So I went with the middle ground of, is this an OCD thought?
Yeah.
Rather than reassurance or the other side of it, because it's very difficult for family and friends to be able to say that. So that also helped because they were then able to bring me up on it and say, you know, is this an OCD thought? Or they'd say, if I was on my phone, what are you getting up to? Are you Googling? Just want to make sure you're not Googling anything and things like that.
Checking in.
And you know, it actually ended up with me deleting Google from my phone. It made it harder for me to get to search anything. I deleted Facebook from my phone as well, so all the things that were kind of not helping me. whilst I was doing ERP. So I'd say ERP was very, very successful. I also, within that, you know, there was other tasks such as being able to use a knife to cut vegetables and things like that, because I had a bit of a fear of holding knives and scissors and things like that. So that was another part of it. But the ERP was very, very successful, and it was just incredible to be able to chop vegetables without fearing that I might hurt someone.
Yeah. Sounds so simple, right? But obviously, by contrast, it's impressive.
It's a big, big task, and it definitely wasn't easy. It really, really wasn't. It was so hard. But I think I just had this full commitment. And I think that by listening to your podcast and listening to other people's stories, I also was able to know that there's other people out there that feel exactly the same way. And I think that's one thing I would say that I really struggled with, was feeling very alone when there's no one around you with an OCD diagnosis. Yeah. People don't understand it. And people also can be quite frightened when you tell them.
Mm.
They're quite shocked. And that's the response that I got in the beginning, which further made me frightened.
Mm.
But the good thing is your family and friends do get their head around it. It just takes them time.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And if they've been exposed to good media, i.e. a true representation of OCD, and there is more of it now, definitely in the UK, still work to be done, then they may not have that reaction. But yeah, if they haven't come across an article on intrusive thoughts or a news story, then yeah, they're going to be like, what's this? You know?
So I think like people kind of, the intrusive thoughts are like, yeah, I've had intrusive thoughts.
Yeah.
And then I sort of thought, oh, great. So I can kind of, it's opened up that conversation that I can kind of speak about it. But I suppose I had differing reactions. So, you know, they said, oh, yeah, I've had intrusive thoughts. And then I, you know, explained that I had intrusive thoughts about that someone might hurt me or I might hurt someone else. And that's when the reaction changed. Yeah. And they were like, oh, no, I haven't had that. Oh, that's a bit different to what I was expecting you to say.
Wow.
And that's when you're like, oh, God. And the panic starts to set in.
Yeah.
But I, you know, with the help of the therapy and, as I said, like lots of research and connecting with others, I was able to confidently say, this is actually normal. You just haven't experienced this yourself.
That's really good. And how are they with it now? They fully get it, or well, as much as they can?
Yeah, I mean, my family and friends are actually fantastic. Like, they really, really get it now. And I think because I did so much research, I was so keen to tell them what I'd found out. Okay. And, you know, even linking them to stories about it and explaining it. So now they're fantastic with it. And you know, I kind of can understand why they had that reaction, because I equally was very undereducated in that department. And I think when you actually look into OCD and you Google it or whatever, if it's not a compulsion, of course, you find so much information. But I think it's the mainstream media that portrays it in a certain light. And there's also this stigma of, which I've experienced a lot. I'm OCD too. So I've had different spectrums of responses. A couple of people said, oh yeah, like I have OCD too, or I know someone that has OCD too. And you're like, oh really? Oh, that's amazing, kind of thing, because you feel like you have that connection with them. And then they're like, yeah, like I have to like clean and, you know, like do all this stuff. And you're like, oh no. They don't mean OCD.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, which is frustrating in a different way then, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like, no, you're just particular. Yeah. But they're not pushed to the point of, I have to do this or I can't sleep at night.
Yeah.
It's a, I'd like it that way, but it doesn't really bother me if it's not. So I've explained to those people what OCD really is, and that we need to get past the "I'm so OCD."
Yeah,
that annoys me so much. But I can understand why they say it, because they don't know the real story of OCD.
Yeah, true. Yeah, very true.
Something you said about, like, because I was going to ask you what, when you were doing, like, watching the news, for example, or eventually, have you done the Netflix show now? Have you watched that?
So I never watched it all the way through, but I was able to watch some of it.
Yeah.
But I'm happy to say that I now, although what I would say is that, so before OCD, I was never one to watch programs like this anyway. Yeah. And it wasn't because I had anxiety at the time, but it just never interested me. So there's some people, like one of my colleagues, who she obsessively watches murder documentaries and she loves it and she's all about it and she finds it so fascinating. I was never one of those people. Yeah. So what I would say is that I would never naturally pick to watch something like that. My fiance was the one that wanted to watch it.
Okay.
But I'm happy to say that now I'm able to watch it without the anxiety.
Okay. Yeah. And you stopped because it was boring.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't of interest to me. So I suppose that's a very fine line with avoidance. But I know that it's not avoidance because I don't have the anxiety with it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So that's when I know the difference between me just not being interested in something and me avoiding something.
Yeah, you stopped watching it because it didn't align with your values.
Exactly.
Versus stopped watching it because you're running from it.
You know? Yeah, exactly. The only time I'd ever watch things like that is when my dad would watch something or my fiance would want to watch something. So it's when someone else wanted to see it, but I'd never go, "Oh yeah, I really want to watch Cecil Hotel."
Yeah.
Same with the Squid Games.
Yeah.
My fiance's loving that. And I'm like, I'm just not interested. But he's able to watch it when I'm in the room. And it's not an issue for me. Yeah. I just don't have an interest in it.
Good to hear. but yeah, I was going to say, so whatever exposure it was, my question was going to be, what was it like resisting doing the compulsions? And obviously your fiance was there to say, don't touch that remote. And you obviously had the willpower not to as well, even though maybe at times you did, I don't know. But it was more, you made the point about deleting Google off your phone, which I really liked, because I'm sure there's some people out there that maybe like, no, leave it on your phone and just don't open Google. But knowing human nature, we want to scaffold to make it like as manageable as possible, because at times we're gonna like give in or falter. So I like that you deleted the app. You took away you added another layer of complexity to do that compulsion, which set
definitely.
You up to win.
Yeah, absolutely. I think again, it's that fine line of avoidance, but I wouldn't say that is avoidance.
No.
Because you're just making it more difficult for yourself to do that compulsion. So the app is not on my phone. I'm still able to use Google, for example, at work. Yeah. So that was something where I couldn't really delete Google because I needed it for work. But making it less accessible for me really helped. And the same with Facebook. So I absolutely would still go on Google and I still would use Facebook, but it made it harder for me to access it. So it's almost as if I had a longer time frame to think about what I was doing.
Yeah.
Because that was the problem for me, is that Google was so easily accessible. I was able to get on it in a matter of seconds. By me deleting off my phone, I have to go on Safari and search Google and then go on Google. And so the process is longer. And therefore, when I wanted to Google compulsion, I would then think, is this good that I'm doing this? Is this going to help me? And I was able to actually kind of go through that thought process before I got to Google.
Yeah. That's a brilliant point. Yeah. If the longer we can delay from that trigger, to the compulsion, the more chance we give ourselves not to do the compulsion.
Yeah, because I think it's just so automatic to do it. So the longer we have to actually think about it, and that's kind of when you have CBT, that's kind of part of it, is retraining your thought process to be like, is this healthy for me to do this? And if it's a genuine Google where I am buying someone something or I want to order something, then I can allow myself to do that. But if I have that feeling of I want to Google something else that could cause me anxiety or worry, then I go, no, I don't need to do that because it's not going to be helpful for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Okay. So is there, so obviously, like you said, you listened to the podcast, you did other reading, not reassurance seeking, but information seeking, and obviously therapy, which was really, really effective. Was there anything else you did alongside all of this, like either for OCD or for just general mental well-being, that seemed to help a bit?
Yeah, definitely. So I would say there's a huge like side to OCD, which relates to healthy lifestyle. So I kind of learned that my OCD tends to flare up when I'm really stressed. And in the beginning I didn't understand that, but now when I look back at what kind of triggered me, I can see that there was a lot going on at once, and a pandemic is something that nobody is prepared for in their life. apart from scientists who knew it was coming, probably, but we were not prepared for that. So it's one of those very unusual things that a lot of people potentially wouldn't have ever experienced in their life. So I can understand why I was triggered, but going forward, it's kind of a thing of knowing my boundaries with stress. And if I, you know, at the moment I'm working, I'm wedding planning, so they're two quite stressful things. So I kind of know now when I'm maybe starting to get too stressed that I need to kind of break it a bit down. And you know, I was in the beginning of my therapy, I was planning the wedding and I was doing loads of things all at once, and I was working, I was doing the therapy, and I was kind of overrun. And I wasn't looking after myself. I'll be completely honest, I wasn't. And I think I was like 100 miles an hour all the time. And my therapist said, you know, I just don't think that this is good for you. You need to like break this down. So now, you know, I'll do one thing of my wedding planning.
Yeah.
Rather than overwhelming myself. The same with work. If I feel overwhelmed, I'll say, you know, actually, this is too much. I need a bit of support with this. So there's that side of it. There's also exercise. So I was doing loads of walking. Getting outside is such a helpful thing because it clears your mind. Yeah, it just majorly helped me, and kind of eating healthier foods. Well, in my case, eating at all really was the step for me. yeah, I think there's just so much more to it than just the therapy. I think it's like, it's almost like a life overhaul.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I think that the stress one's important, and exercise. But I think what comes to me with that is like, know yourself, that saying, you know, that you learn what triggers you and what, when it's worse, and then you made adjustments, which is just not for OCD, for your well-being. That's a good skill to know how to like manage stress and adapt.
Yeah. So I think in the beginning I would like use my notes on my phone. And if I started getting kind of anxiety over something, or I was triggered by something, I'd write it down. And that really, really helped me, because it's very difficult when you're in that kind of anxiety OCD moment to kind of rationally think. Your logic is there, but it kind of disappears. And I think having it physically on my phone, which is always on me, on my notes, I was able to remind myself of what has triggered me or what is not healthy for me. So having it written down definitely helps with that as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then, like, was there like an epiphany moment or light bulb moment or eureka moment where you something just clicked, either like how you saw OCD or how you saw the treatment of OCD, just anything like that?
Yeah, I suppose it's been kind of more recent for me. I think one of the biggest epiphanies I kind of had with OCD was I felt that I was no longer me. So I had this real thing about when am I going to get back to my old self?
Yeah.
And now I understand that I was never gone. This is me.
Yeah.
And that might not make a lot of sense to some people, but it's kind of one of those things where you do feel that OCD is this horrible thing that makes you lose yourself. But now I've had this kind of epiphany of actually, I know myself better than I've ever done in my life. And I had anxiety when I was younger and I didn't understand it and I didn't know what triggered it. Now I know so much more about myself that it's just great, really.
Yeah,
it's great to know about yourself and actually accept that OCD is a part of you and it isn't this horrible thing that lives in you that you want to get rid of. It actually makes you stronger.
Yeah, it's a part of you.
Yeah.
That maybe needs to be healed or worked with or understood. And then it becomes less scary.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's like one of the biggest, well, one of the hardest things that I had to accept was that it wasn't, there isn't the old me. I'm still me.
Yeah.
And once I accepted that, that was my big epiphany because it was like, oh, hang on a minute. I'm still me. I'm just different, but that's okay. Because also as you get older, you also change as a person and you grow. So it's part of my growing process and that's kind of how I see it now. And that's massively helped me because I think you have a lot of negative feelings around OCD. You tend to feel very ashamed. You want to get back to the old you before OCD. You want to, I don't know, just shake it off. And it's just not one of those things that you can. It's something that always lives with you. But there are times that I will be really good, like at the moment. And there'll be times where I will experience it again. But the tools that I've learned from therapy will lessen that experience. And it might only be days of anxiety rather than months or years of anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah, really good point. And I get what you're saying about, I just want to go back to the old me. And I think, what was I going to say? Yeah, you're right. You said you change throughout your life anyway, as you get older, or maybe as you get married or have kids, or you're changing all the time, or you change jobs and that changes who you are and you get new groups of friends and new sports and hobbies and blah, blah, blah. But I think because it's gradual, we don't notice. So we accept that it's still me. But where OCD is so sudden for some people and it's like, oh, Matt, I miss the old me. It's because it's sudden. We notice the change, whereas we don't notice other changes necessarily.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, it was very sudden, although I can look back now and see that I had OCD tendencies and that I definitely did certain things when I was younger that I now know was OCD. It didn't really come out for me until, you know, I'm 26. So, I think, yeah, because it's so sudden, you're desperate to get back to the old you. And I think when I said the old me, I was referring more to me being happy.
Okay.
Because I have always been a very happy, bubbly person. So because I wasn't like that at that point, I thought, I just need to get back to that. And I was just almost so fixated on that, that I was stressing myself out even more. And I was just spiraling even more. Yeah, exactly. But I'm happy to say that now I am happy and I am back to my old self, if you can say that.
You're doing quote marks as you
say. Yeah, sorry. I know. I'm doing quote marks back to my old self because there is really no back to my old self, but I would say I'm able to be happy again and to live my life normally and without OCD impacting me as much as it did.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, that's great to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And what's the next question? So words of hope. So anyone listening, you know, words of hope, what would you tell them?
Oh, it's a difficult one, but there's so many words of hope. I would say that it absolutely does get better and you can live a very happy and healthy life with OCD. OCD does not have to be a prison sentence for you. The biggest sort of word of hope I would have is that you can live with OCD and be happy, and the quicker that you accept that OCD is a part of you, the quicker you will be happy.
Yeah, like
that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Does and then yeah, so your 20-year-old self, you could call her, obviously that was before the OCD kicked off in the way it has put you in therapy. What do you say to that 20-year-old you?
This is always a hard one. I would say that you will be proud of yourself in the future.
Mm.
You will be proud of how far you've come and how much you've learned about yourself.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. And then probably the harder question, you've got a billboard where you live. What do you want written on that billboard?
About myself or
anything?
About anything.
Anything. Could be a favorite TV show. It doesn't have to be.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would say that the billboard would say, learn to let go of things that you cannot control. That is one of the biggest messages that I keep in my mind. And it really, really helps.
Yeah.
Because we cannot control everything in life. So learning that is a huge step as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if we can't control it and we try and control it, we're just going to get frustrated and upset.
Yeah, absolutely. And one more thing I'd like to really sort of put out there as well is that OCD is ever changing as well. And I've experienced this. So, you know, since I've experienced relationship OCD and also sort of questioning whether I'm really here and things like that. Mm. So I've definitely experienced varying sides of OCD, but my advice to people would be that treat it exactly the same as any other topic you've ever experienced.
Yeah.
Just because it's changed topic doesn't mean that you need to deal with it any differently, and that's where I went wrong in the beginning. So yeah, just always treat every kind of topic of OCD in exactly the same way in terms of treatment, in terms of the way that you think about things.
Spot on. Yeah, the it feels like it's changed, but it hasn't changed a single bit. Yeah.
Exactly. When I went from the harm OCD to then the relationship OCD, I said to my therapist, oh my god, and I was doing all the wrong things again, and she said that there's no difference. It still makes you anxious, and you know, I would not say that there can be any topic that's worse than another either. It's only worse in your opinion, but actually the anxiety that someone feels about harm OCD can be the same about relationship OCD. The feeling is exactly the same. It's just a different topic.
Yeah, I 100% agree with the anxiety. Like, yeah, if some religion wouldn't necessarily bother me, but for someone else it's going to be torturous, you know.
Yeah, I would exactly. say that
there's other emotions that are slightly different in case if we think about like paedophile themed OCD, because there's societal stigma around obviously that topic. So those and probably rightly so, but those feelings come up too. But yeah, from an anxiety point of view, I don't think it's any different. It's as,
yeah, I think like when torturous. I suppose in society it's different, but I think, you know, some people might think, oh, it must be so much worse to have harm OCD than it would be to have relationship OCD, because to them it could be very trivial. Yeah. But actually, to the person that's experiencing it, yeah, I can honestly say, me thinking that I might harm someone and me thinking that my partner might leave me felt exactly the same in anxiety.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, you're right. Because on the surface, you could see you're only worrying about a relationship. That's not as bad as worrying about murdering someone. but obviously, to the person, it is as bad.
It really is. Yeah. And as you said, it's also what's important to you as well, yeah, and how comfortable you are with certain topics. The same as you just said with religion. To some people who are very religious, you know, to them, it's a very big topic. For me, it wouldn't bother me. And the same with potentially thinking that I, you know, might be gay, for example. Yeah. I'm very comfortable with that, and if I was, it wouldn't bother me. But for some people, that would cause exactly the same anxiety. So exactly.
Yeah, very good point. It's hard, isn't it, when you have one theme or a couple themes, and to think, oh, I wish I had that, but it wouldn't make a damn bit of difference.
Yeah, when I had the harm OCD, I was like, I just want to get rid of it. Why couldn't I have something else? It's wrong to think that, because it did move on, and that is the way that OCD works. It will at some point move on to something else, and it's just being prepared for that. And I'm kind of all accepting of that now, and knowing that I have the tools to deal with it. I'm recognizing that, okay, this feels very similar to before. This is probably OCD.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, good point. And lastly, is there anything else you wish you could have shared today?
No, I think that I've shared everything that I wanted to. Yeah.
Well, look, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. I've enjoyed hearing it, and I'm sure it will inspire others.
Thank you for having me, and it's a pleasure to be able to speak on here. So thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip/donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast. And thank you to NoCD for supporting our work. And if you want to find out more about NoCD, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.